Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Happy weekend. I'm Frank Rush. Good to have you along as we do another Focus on Community. By the way, don't forget, if you miss any part of today's program and you'd like to go back and listen to it or download it and play it for family and friends, you can always go to our website. We've got it for you there as a podcast. Just look for Focus on Community and you'll find a complete library of all of our past programs as well. Today, Susan Tingling with the Vigo County Historical Society and Museum joins us. Susan, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
So tell us what your official title with the Vigo County Historical Society.
I am the executive director.
You're it. You're the one.
Not just the only one, but that is my title.
Yeah, history stops at your door. You know, I tell you, you're relatively new to the job, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
since we opened in November.
Yeah, so just a little over about 2 months, something like that. Mary Lee Hagen, your predecessor, pretty well known throughout the community. And obviously, she left some big shoes to fill, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, she was executive director for 25 years. And before that, she was on the board of directors. So she's made a lot of history with the society.
And she was kind of one of the big pushes behind the new museum now, too, right?
Oh, she has been planning this for years. Even when she was on the board, they talked about moving into a new location. So this has been on her radar for a long, long time.
Does it make you kind of nervous to step into something after all this planning that's been going on?
Well, it would if I hadn't just spent 6 years with Mary Lee, and we shared an office, and you know, she was so encouraging and so helpful through the whole process. So it's not as scary as it could have been.
The Vigo County Historical Society, I think it's hard to underestimate exactly what it is you guys do, because I mean, you do so much and you've been around for so long, and you've got a big job to actually communicate the history of, we say Vigo County, but in a lot of ways it's very intertwined with even some of the surrounding counties. It's a big job to tell that story.
It is. And, you know, the society formed in 1922. So it goes way back in history, looking at what type of things did they want to collect, what stories did they want to tell. And the former museum location opened in 1958. So that's a lot of years of collecting our history.
In a way, you're kind of blessed with that, because you've got a lot of the history there documented and cataloged in-house. A group like yours that's maybe just starting out today or starting out within the past 20 years would have a hard time, because they'd have to go back and recreate all that. You've got a lot of that already, you know, through the history of the organization. You've got a lot of that information right there at your fingertips.
Oh, absolutely. And when you think the people that were meeting in 1922, our county formed in 1818. So, and we go back to the building of Fort Harrison in 1811. There were people in 1922 that had a close relationship with those who were around then. So it's a lot of really good history and stories that were from that time period. And you're right, we don't have to recreate it. We can go back and find all these stories. Our challenge now is to figure out a way to tell those stories the way a 21st century audience would want to experience them.
Well, there's that. And also, I would think, too, over the years, not just you, but all of your predecessors have probably had the one big problem that I know a lot of us deal with, even at home. What do we keep and what do we throw away? And all of a sudden, you wind up drowning in your own history, so to speak, if you're not careful.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in the Victorian house that we were in, the Sage Mansion, that was just getting critical. I'm surprised that the walls didn't bust open with as much stuff as we had there. And we're blessed with this new building to have so much space, but we're still looking at the collection and trying to figure out, you know, how many duplicates of something do we need, and trying to make room for all the new things that people are bringing in. You know, it's funny, now that we have the new museum open, people are always coming in and saying, you know, I have such and such from my family, and you know, I'd love to donate it. And one of my first questions is, well, how big is it? because we're thinking, where are we going to store something? And now we have the opportunity in this location to actually have very large artifacts on display.
Your new location, just a little bit east of 9th Street, right on Wabash and the old Ehrman Building, which in and of itself is a bit of a museum before you ever got a hold of it.
Oh, I mean, the building was built in 1895, and you're absolutely right. As the Ehrman Manufacturing Company, and it's right on the National Road, Highway 40, Wabash Avenue. It is right next to, or in, actually kind of encompasses the space that the Wabash and Erie Canal was on, and then we have the historic railroads that come through Terre Haute. So we're in a perfect location to tell our history.
And you're right in the heart, and that building is right in the heart of what once was, a lot of people may not realize, Terre Haute actually had a garment district.
And that was part of it,
you know, so that was a big part of the history. So how do you actually go through and decide what's important and what's not? I mean, because when you look at that much history, and of course, everybody has a finite amount of storage space. So how do you decide what is really important to tell, what's important to keep, and what do you pass over? I mean, how do you make those decisions?
It's heart-wrenching. We have to look at, first of all, our mission is to protect, preserve, and collect and tell the stories of Vigo County. So we look there first, and then we look at how can we tell those stories? What kind of exhibits are we going to do in the future? Because our exhibits are going to change on a regular basis, so we have an opportunity to rotate the collection through. And then also looking at if we have more than one of an object, is there one that's in better shape than another? And then also looking at, is it relevant to not just local history, but national and international history? And will that item also help us tell those stories and how the Wabash Valley was connected to those things that happened around the world?
Susan Tingley with the Vigo County Historical Society and Museum, our guest today. When you get somebody that brings you an item or asks you about an item, or will you just happen across an item, how obviously you want it to be as original as possible, but do you look at restoring items or do you just try to leave them in the shape that you got them?
You know, it depends. We do a little restoration if it means that the piece can't be on display without it. So especially when it comes to paper artifacts, sometimes we have to do a little restoration. Framed pieces, we will take them out of their frames, clean up the glass, use archival material to put them back into the frame so that they last a long, long time. But, you know, we don't refinish furniture. We want it to look old. We want it to show its age. That's part of the history of the piece.
I think when you find out, too, you guys tend to really try to feature the people. It's not just items or you know, inanimate objects that you can put on a pedestal and say, here's what a lamp looked like, you know, way back. You actually really try to tell the story of the people that made Vigo County and Terre Haute.
Well, and that's absolutely true. When you look at the Wabash Valley, and it's the people who made us who we are. And the items just simply help us to tell that story. Sometimes it's a place. Sometimes it's a building that helps us tell that story. But ultimately, it goes back to the people. You know, every month we have a Time Travelers Club meeting. And it's a free event that we announce where we're going to meet. We meet somewhere in the county at a location where we tell the history of the building or the location. But we also make the leap then to tell the stories of the people who were there. And that's why people come out.
What are you most proud of as far as the society and the museum goes? What would you say, I guess, maybe is your crowning jewel when it comes to the piece that you like to show off or the story that you like to tell?
Ooh, that's too hard. We tell so many stories, and I love every one of them. There's not a spot in this museum that I'm not proud of. And a big part of it, I guess what I'm most proud of, is the fact that when people come in to this new museum, what we're hearing are such positive comments, and we definitely got the wow factor into our exhibits.
Yeah, I was going to say, I went through it myself here just a couple of weeks ago, and I was just amazed by what's there, what it looks like, And literally, I probably could have, I mean, I spent a couple hours in there as it was. I could have gone probably a few more hours and still not taken a look at everything and really read all the information that's available. Is there a story that you guys want to tell? I'll go about this from a different direction. Is there a story that you want to tell, but you've not been able to get a piece or the full documentation to be able to tell the story? What kind of things are you looking for that maybe you're just missing?
That's hard because there are a lot of history mysteries that we come across, and we'd love to be able to tell more about the story. Sometimes what we have are pieces of the story, but we don't have photographs or we don't have artifacts to help tell the story. Can I put my finger on one right now? No, because there's so many of them. But we also have a lot that we can share. For instance, if you go into our business and industry exhibit, we feature a different industry for a couple of months, 3 to 4 months, and then we'll change up that exhibit. So right now we feature the breweries and distilleries, but the next time you come in, it might be the coal mining industry or the banking industry. So as those different exhibits come up, what we like to do is reach out to people in the community who might have items that they can loan for exhibit. They're not ready to part with them. A lot of people have items in their collection that mean so much to them that they're not ready to donate, but they will loan it for an exhibit.
Because they want to share that.
The museum helps us do that, yeah.
Yeah, they want to share that. Obviously, doing what you do, the museum, first of all, it was a couple of years in the making just to get enough money together to actually to get to where you're at today. And just because you're there, you're open, and you've got displays placed, does not mean that, okay, we're all done. We don't need any more money.
No, you're right.
And that's just it. It's not a cheap thing what you do, because history is not cheap to document and display and to teach other people about. And so you're looking constantly for not only people who appreciate history to come in and see the museum, but also maybe if they'd like to become members or to help you out. You know, items are one thing, but to actually be able to afford the tables and the lights to show them to people, that's something else that you're always going to need.
Yes, you're right. We are still working on paying for the construction of this magnificent museum. And so we're looking for donations on that side. But then as far as running the museum, we did set up a whole new business model from what we had before. At the old museum, we relied heavily on donations and memberships, but you really didn't get anything for your membership. At the new location, we have a revenue stream from admissions. We have revenue from the soda shop where you can actually go in and get a snack or lunch or a float, Coke float. And then we have the museum store that's been very active, especially this holiday season. So we have a revenue stream, and what we need to do is to keep that going, plus memberships. And memberships now have advantages where you can get free admission to the museum for a year. You can get discounts. You can get invitations to members-only events and things like that.
Becoming a member is one thing, but if you really appreciate the history, I know there's certain sponsorships that are available too, because when I walked through the museum, I saw several people did sponsor some displays, but there was a few empty signs, so there's still an opportunity for people. If they would like to do a sponsorship, they can do that too, right?
Absolutely. We have sponsorships available for several exhibit spaces. We have the auditorium, which seats 100 people, up to 130 people with flex seating, and that space is available for sponsorship. You can even put your name on the building.
Well, you can be right up there with Max Ehrman, you know? You could,
That's right.
You know, you could be running in circles with that. What's the immediate goal for the Historical Society? What's the next big thing you want to accomplish?
Well, first of all, in 2020, we would like to pay off our bridge loan for the construction. That is number one in my eyes, because that has to be done in order for us to continue with what we want to do here in the building. Then it's just really keeping that wow factor up with the exhibits as we change them up. We have a schedule for changing the exhibits, and then we also have a schedule for future programming that we're going to be doing here in the museum.
You know, changing those exhibits, knowing that I've been in it and seen what you have to offer, and for those who haven't been there yet, changing these exhibits, there's a lot of work involved in that.
Yes. setting them up initially was huge. I tell people that I think it took a couple of years off my life expectancy to do that. But changing them, yeah, that it's touchy because you have to do it in a way that you can keep the museum open. So in some instances, we can change over an entire exhibit space. In others, we will be phasing in changes, bits and pieces, so that we don't have to shut down the entire exhibit.
I'm going to put you on the spot one more time here and ask you about this. You guys have, like I said, lots of displays on there, and everybody is pretty much familiar with Terre Haute. And like you mentioned, the brewery and the distillery history of the city. I think everybody knows about that, or at least have heard about it, and the champagne velvet and all that. We've all heard the legend of Stiffy Green. We've all heard the legend about the Coca-Cola bottle. But is there something in particular in there that you really like that kind of surprises people and go, well, I didn't know that, that you're really happy and really proud to show off?
Oh, that's really hard, too, because there are so many things. It depends on everyone's level of knowledge about our history. And there are people that are really surprised at the things that have come out of Terre Haute that they're then very proud of. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to stress, that pride of place in our community. And getting people to see that, you know, Terre Haute has done a lot for not just the local area, but nationally and internationally as well. You know that the Jacob Bauer is referred to as the father of the soda fountain because he's the one who developed a means of putting carbon dioxide into tanks that can then add bubbles to your soda.
See right there, there's something right there that I wasn't even sure about, didn't even really know about, and that is the fact, had it not been for Jacob Bauer, there wouldn't be a need for a Coke bottle. You know? So, I mean, everything's got a starting point somewhere, and it really wasn't with the bottle. It was with what goes in the bottle, and had it not been for a guy from Terre Haute, right, we wouldn't need it. So that's...
Well, when you see carbonated drinks coming out of a soda fountain, that's where you want to think of Jacob Bauer. And Keep in mind, Jacob, where's that name? Bauer, Oscar Bauer is the one who reinvigorated the Terre Haute Brewing Company after Prohibition and made Champagne Velvet famous. So that Bauer family had some, you know, they had their hands in all kinds of drinks.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, there, now see, we are very thankful for him.
Yeah, right.
You know? So, Susan, I tell you, now again, the museum, I mean, that's kind of the crown jewel here. I mean, you can become a member of the society. We can take the monthly little walkthroughs and tours that you guys have, and that's kind of neat. But if you want to go to the museum, tell us about the hours and when, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of an admission cost, but it's certainly not much. Mm-hmm.
We've tried to keep the admission costs as low as we possibly could, and the hours are much more extended than they used to be at the old place. So we are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. We're closed on Mondays, and then occasionally we'll have extended hours into the evening, such as First Fridays, when we participate that with the downtown area.
And, of course, if you want, you guys have your own little gift shop in there with all kinds of souvenirs and some cool things that do kind of commemorate different parts of Terre Haute.
Actually, we had a post yesterday that kind of, in our opinion, has gone viral. We posted a photograph of our T-shirt that says, I got railroaded in Terre Haute. And we all know what railroaded means in Terre Haute. It has a different meaning in the rest of the country. Uh-huh. But we're all very familiar with the railroads and sitting there at the trains. But that T-shirt has really sparked an interest.
It may not be true, but I am convinced that Terre Haute is responsible for getting trains past, you know, this point onto the rest west of the country. Because if it hadn't been for every train that went out west, came through here.
Absolutely.
And I think
whether
it still does.
Whether they're going east and west or they're going north and south, we've got trains coming through Terre Haute.
Yeah, and they still do that, too. So it's well, anyway, again, well, I tell you, the Vigo County Historical Society and Museum, it's a neat jewel that Terre Haute has. And we thank you for spending some time with us today. Hope lots of folks will go in, and hopefully maybe they'll pick up a sponsorship or they'll at least come in and make a donation and help you guys get the final loans paid off for construction and everything and get that all put together so that way you guys can keep keep documenting the history of the Wabash Valley because it's quite important. Susan Tingley, thank you for being with us today. If you missed part of the show, you want to go back and listen to it again, podcast, go to our website. We've got it for you right there. You can download it, listen to it, and again, be sure to check out the Historical Society Museum. It's a neat place. We'll see you next weekend.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.